Get ready for a game changer. Sarah Westall is bringing you Business Game Changers Radio. Sarah will bring you leading experts, visionaries, and newsmakers who provide the best commentary on big issues and cutting-edge innovations. Sarah's 20 years as a business executive will help you think like an entrepreneur with expertise, energy, and attitude. Now here's your host, Sarah Westall.
Welcome to Business Game Changers. I'm Sarah Westall. Today we have a fascinating discussion that I'm having with Gwen Shotwell, the president of SpaceX. She is going to talk to us about what the plans are for SpaceX, what their future goals are for space exploration, and many other things. It's a fascinating discussion. And I'm going to talk to Sean Wilkinson. He is the CEO of a storage company. It's a data storage company, but they're using BitChain and blockchain and distributed storage. He claims it completely takes care of security issues with storage of your data. And so he's going to talk about what they have going on there. Really fascinating. But before we get into that, we're going to dive right into my interview with Gwen Shotwell, president of SpaceX.
Hi, Gwen. Welcome to the program.
Thank you very much. It's really nice to be here.
Well, I'm so excited to have you because SpaceX is just an exciting company. You are doing so many firsts in the industry, and it's kind of the future of what we're doing with, the human race almost. And so one of your goals, SpaceX goals, is to enable people to live on other planets. When do you think you will reach that goal, and what do you think needs to be done to get to that reality?
So, yeah, there's no question. The company was founded ultimately to build space transportation systems that will allow people to live on other planets. You know, our site right now is on Mars. It's the closest planet to Earth that is kind of sort of habitable. Elon Musk, my boss, has stated that Mars is a fixer-upper planet. It's one of the funniest things he said. It's a fixer-upper planet. There's a lot of work to do, but it's the closest that we think we can get to from Earth and actually have settlements there. So the time frame, hard to project. 15 or so years is certainly what we're shooting for. And we'll be sending lots of missions to Mars prior to that. And you ask, so what's necessary? I think one of the key enabling technologies is that we have to get right is the whole concept of reusability. And
be more of a business, take more of a business approach to it, and be able to cut costs and be able to reuse everything. Is that more the concept?
There's no question that reusability will help out on the business side, but pragmatically, from a technical perspective, if you don't have the ability to come back, meaning reuse your system, then you are by definition sending people on a one-way trip to Mars, and that's not what we're about. We want to make the trip there and back.
So they feel good about the ship that they're in is going to allow them to come back. It's not like see you later.
Correct. That's exactly right. And if for some reason you get to Mars and you don't like it, the return trip is actually free because we got to bring that ship back. So that we can
And so you see this as something that will be more tourist-based?
Not really, actually. SpaceX is not in the tourism business. There are other folks that are looking at that. I'm not saying that we wouldn't end up doing tourism or working tourism at some point, but it's certainly not our focus. We're much more focused on building reliable transportation systems that will get people really to move, to have settlements on Mars.
Well, you kind of need the foundation.
I don't think that's really tourism.
But you kind of need the foundation first, right? You can't do the other stuff until you get a real good working process for it.
That's correct.
You have another goal, which is to revolutionize space technology. How do you think you're doing that?
Well, I think the hardest thing that you can possibly do in this arena is build space transportation systems that are reliable enough and reusable to be able to facilitate this kind of transporting folks to Mars. So the two goals are really so closely linked. So the technology that needs to occur for sure is reusable. And hopefully some of your audience has seen the landing video. We landed the first stage after we launched the Orbcomm, 11 Orbcomm satellites last December. I think it was December 21st.
You were the first one ever.
We were the first one to send an orbital, that's right, an orbital, basically an orbital capable ship and return back to Earth. That was the first time, which was really exciting. And then our most recent launch, the Jason 3 launch out of Vandenberg Air Force Base here in California, we did actually land that stage again on the drone ship. Unfortunately, the leg didn't lock, and so we fell over. And that makes for some interesting video footage as well. So there's two pretty cool videos out there, I think on either YouTube or even our homepage, where you can see these videos and even others. We've had landing attempts before, but the 21st was the first time we got it on land. And then the most recent one for Jason 3, I'm taking credit for a landing because we did land. It was pretty much a bullseye landing on the drone ship. We just fell over after we landed.
Well, that's good. I mean, but that's part of the process, right? Each step you have to work out a new problem.
Absolutely. Yeah, and you know, some look at it and refer to those missions as failures. And you know, this is such a hard job. To me, they're all successes. You know,
well, yeah, you just learn
full reusability.
Well, that's part of
you have to learn.
You have to learn, and so you learn it. And it's better to happen now. And you right, the more you can figure out, it's always a sequence of steps.
Exactly.
Your company has been first in so many areas, like these reusable rockets. What other firsts have you accomplished?
So we were the first company to send a Dragon ship or Dragon-like ship into orbit and bring it back. That was the first private company. We did that in December of 2010. The Dragon spaceship is kind of the foundation technology that we use to service the International Space Station with initially cargo. You know, we're sending food and science experiments up to the International Space Station using the Falcon 9 and the Dragon. And now we're in the process of upgrading that Dragon spaceship to be able to take American astronauts and other International Space Station crew. So yeah, so SpaceX was the first private company to be able to orbit and return to Earth a spacecraft like that. So Europe had done it, actually the space shuttle, so governments had done it. So space shuttle had done it, the Russians do it with the Soyuz, the Chinese have done it with their technology, but we were the first private company to do it.
Which is amazing. And that's kind of where things are leading, with private companies doing much more of the work. Do you think the Martian movie was part of getting people excited to colonize Mars, to start thinking in that direction?
I think that, by the way, the book is extraordinary as well. I read the book, I don't know, a couple of years ago. It's hilarious. It's really funny. There's some foul language in it. So for those that get offended by
it's funny.
It's not recommended. But it's a hilarious book. And I think the movie actually was pretty good. I think it did the book pretty good justice, I think. And given the response to that film, you know, I think a lot of people are starting to get excited about the possibility of living on other planets. There have been lots of shows that think would get people excited about space travel. And I think certainly have. Star Trek, obviously, is a classic. Battlestar Galactica is one of my favorites, the new one, not the old one.
Yeah.
And I love the Firefly series. Such fun shows, lots of human drama and personalities, but the technology is cool.
Like, yes.
I think it's really, I can't wait to be able to travel in space.
It'd just be amazing.
Yeah.
I mean, there's nothing, it's just amazing. Well, you have one of the most exciting posts in general, being president of SpaceX, doing so many firsts and kind of leading the way. What is your background getting you to this point?
So I'm an engineer. Got both my bachelor's degree and master's degree at Northwestern University in the Chicago area. I grew up in the Chicago area. So my undergraduate degree is mechanical engineering. My master's degree is applied math. And I actually started out my career as an engineer in Detroit, working for the automotive industry, but decided that I would move west to California and have been in the aerospace industry for a long time, almost since dinosaurs roamed the earth in 1988.
That's how you feel, right?
As my kids would say. Yeah, so I've been in this industry since 1988 and have had a number of different roles at a number of different companies, but I've been at SpaceX since 2002. A long time ago.
So when did it open? When did it launch, SpaceX?
So the company was founded, I believe, in March of 2002.
Okay.
Doors kind of opened in May timeframe, and I joined in, I think, in August.
So you were one of the first executives to come on board. They kind of need someone to lead the ship first.
I have a boss. So
yeah.
My boss led the ship.
Oh, well,
I was hired in actually as vice president of business development, which is basically a sales post. I had a lot of connections in the industry. And so, I was hired in to head up the sales activity and then just kept acquiring other things to do here at SpaceX. Pretty typical of a startup, actually.
And then you ended up getting promoted to do what you're doing now.
Correct. Yeah, 2008.
Well, how involved is Elon Musk in the company on a day-to-day level?
He's very involved. He basically runs and directs all the development activities here at the company. I tend to focus on the day-to-day operations, but he focuses on the visionary and, like I say, the future product development. He's at SpaceX at least 3 days a week. He's also CEO of Tesla, and he spends some time with Tesla as well. But he's heavily engaged. Actually,
how could you not be heavily engaged in something as exciting as this? I mean, you know, I don't know. That's me.
I love my job. I have a great job. I think I have a better job than Elon, but he has many jobs. many jobs, actually.
Yeah, sometimes just being able to focus and not be in a fishbowl is a little more fun. So I have a special treat. My daughter's science class, she goes to Visitation High School in Minnesota, and they have a wonderful STEM program there. It's a girl science class, and their teacher, Dr. John Lowen, had them do an assignment because they knew that I was going to be interviewing you, and they had the whole class come up with questions set for me to ask you. So I picked out three questions from their class, and I'm going to ask you them. And so their first question. Yeah, so I hope you're okay with that.
Yeah, of course. Sure.
Okay, so what are the plans for the future of SpaceX?
So we are aiming to build a highly reliable, highly reusable, and cost-effective way to move people from planet Earth to Mars and then eventually other locations.
Like asteroids and different moons?
Possibly.
Or outside of our solar system even?
It will. That's further out, but for sure. You know, once we master getting people from Earth to Mars and back, we'll have to come up with something even more innovative. Yeah, I mean, I spoke about a year or so ago to NPR, someone on NPR, and talking about intergalactic travel. So,
that would be the future plan,
right? That's pretty far out, but that's still cool stuff to think about.
Well, yeah, and you have to come up with different technologies to be able to get there in a reasonable amount of time, I would think, and there's other issues.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Do you believe there is a future in space tourism?
I do think so. It's not something that SpaceX is focused on. You know, I like any enterprise that's going to get people thinking about space and the things you can do in space. I think it's critically important that you demonstrate high reliability before you embark on involving the general public in space activities. There's a lot of work to go. Just like you have test pilots that understand, you know, the nature and risks involved in their jobs before you put the public on an airplane, on a new airplane.
Well, so, you're pretty much you're the airplane and the vehicles for space, right? And so they have to get that first before tourism could happen.
Most definitely. It's got to be right. And it's funny, we do kind of look at our business and benchmark what we're doing against the airline industry. They're large vehicles, pretty high technology, that are moving, that are crew rated. You know, they're moving people from between great distances in some case. Now, obviously, we're going to have to leave Mother Earth and get outside the atmosphere and travel to another planet and then land on another planet. Those things are all very difficult to do. But we do like to use the airline analogy for the work that we're doing. Because right now, people, you know, when you get on an airplane, you leave LA, you go to New York City, you don't throw that airplane out when you land in New York.
Yeah, you don't throw it out.
Yes. You don't throw it out. You don't toss the aircraft because otherwise people will be flying.
It's absurd, right? That's an absurd.
It's absurd.
That's what we're doing.
Right now, rockets aren't really reusable. And that's why we're so focused on it.
Next question, our last question here. Is space, and it's a couple part question, is space explorations and space science a growing industry? And what is the potential for job growth? And is this field to look into for the future career path for people interested in science and the STEM and other fields too, I guess?
So there's no question that the focus on space and technology that will be applicable to space projects is growing rapidly. I think venture capital in entrepreneurial space-focused businesses are growing thousands of percentages. So it is absolutely a great career path, I think. And you don't have to be an aerospace engineer to work on space-related projects. You know, I'm a mechanical engineer. We have chemical engineers working on our propulsion systems. We have electrical engineers and software engineers working on our systems as well. I mean, think about, I love software engineering. I think it's really cool. My son is a great gamer. and I think writing software for games is great, but can you imagine writing software and developing display systems for the first spaceships that take people to Mars? I think that's pretty exciting.
Oh, that would be, well, but there's so many similarities to writing computer games as to writing any kind of, you know, any kind of software, and especially I would think with the stuff in space. My background is computer science. I have an engineering degree in computer science, and I just know that there's so many similarities to the 3D simulations and everything that you do in games to, you know, real world stuff.
Mm-hmm. Most definitely.
Since we have a little bit more time, I'm going to ask another question that they have here. How do you decide what to research and explore?
So we definitely take a building block approach to what we're doing. We started with, you know, a little rocket called Falcon 1 with one engine on the back. And now we're moving to we've been launching Falcon 9, which is a rocket with 9 engines on the back end of the first stage. So the fact that we're taking this incremental approach to building systems that are capable enough to get to Mars, we don't necessarily have to we didn't set out in 2002 when we were founded knowing exactly what technologies we were going to focus on. We knew propulsion systems were going to be incredibly important, and much of the focus early on was on ARP, basically liquid oxygen, and RP, which is rocket propellant. It's like a high-grade kerosene. So we focused on propulsion technologies. At that time, almost all the new technology being developed in propulsion was outside of the United States, and frankly, I think we brought excitement back in the liquid propulsion arena. I think we're the largest producers of liquid engines on the planet, actually. Yeah. So basically, I think this is a really long-winded way of saying, because of our incremental building block approach, we've been able to assess what technology we need to focus on, and then go after it, achieve a vehicle that has a market. We can basically make money from launching that vehicle and having that launch service, and then looking at the next thing that we need to do. So reusability is key. I can't overstress how important it is to make sure our rockets and spaceships are reusable. And so you have to look at, you know, lightweight materials. You have to look at new guidance algorithms and the software associated with implementing those algorithms so that you can land a rocket on a ship or on the target at our landing zones right near our launch sites. I think future technology obviously will be continue to miniaturize avionics in this industry. Like, you know, an iPhone is an incredibly capable device, and yet the electronics that we fly today on rockets is, I think, much behind that. So there's technology to be developed there, lots of software to write. Let's put it this way, there's almost nothing that doesn't need advanced technology development to do what we're trying to do.
We could have a
lots of opportunity for careers.
Months and months to talk about this, that one question. Well, I'm going to move on to some other questions, which I think is pretty important. When you hear, you know, all these private companies starting up, and especially one like SpaceX, what is the future of NASA, and how does NASA fit into this whole picture?
Yeah, so NASA has been an extraordinary both partner to SpaceX as well as customer. They're our largest customer. So basically, NASA is looking at and will focus on space exploration and deep space exploration. And what they're trying to do is cut away from let's call it the recurring or the nominal operations associated with getting from Earth to the International Space Station. I don't want to call it the easy stuff because it's certainly not easy, but it's more routine. So they want to, you know, hand over to private industry the more routine elements so that they can focus their resources on deep space exploration, as well as figuring out how to live on other planets as well.
So they're still doing all that exploration, but has NASA been split from the military? Because isn't there the Air Force has gotten really involved in this as well? And so it's like two different brands. And I don't know how much you're involved in that, but I was watching a 60 Minutes episode and they had the military has a space airplane, which I thought was really interesting.
So the military does do a lot of activities in space. In fact, I think their space budget, the military space budget, is larger than the NASA budget. And they do some similar things, but with different purposes. You know, NASA sends probes and landers to Mars to see whether there was life there. And the Air Force puts satellites in orbit to, you know, keep track of what's going on around the globe, predict weather. NASA also does some weather satellites as well, space weather as well as Earth weather. As a matter of fact, the Jason 3 satellite that we just launched for NASA was kind of ocean monitoring.
So it's more of a military focus versus an exploration, advancement of humanity focus.
A science focus, right? Yeah. The Air Force is not in the business of science, whereas NASA is, and then the Air Force is obviously more in the business of defense.
Sure, although you have to be involved in science because I would think, you know, the military obviously has to be involved in science to figure things out, but not in the advancements of figuring out life and things like that.
Exactly.
Yeah. Okay. Their space airplane, and I didn't add these to questions that I was going to ask you, but now I'm thinking of some of these things. Their space airplane that they had that I saw in 60 Minutes, is that something that more like what you guys are going to be doing too? Because I would assume they ship that up and then they can fly around in space with it, but it's not like a rocket that can come back and forth. Do you have space airplanes and things too, like in the mix that you're going to be developing?
So Dragon is a spaceship. I wouldn't call it a space airplane, but it's for sure a spaceship.
That's a better term for it.
Yeah. And we will be building bigger spaceships because the Dragon is more like an SUV-sized spaceship. And I think if you were going to Mars, you'd want a much larger.
You want a big semi-truck.
In an SUV.
Or a train.
You want a giant. Yeah, you want something much larger. Yeah, we're definitely in the business of building spaceships.
Okay, that's fantastic. That's exciting. You're in the Star Trek business. You're the
ultimately,
beginning of Star
yes.
Trek.
Yes. We've got a long way to go before we can go warp speed and find wormholes, but yeah, it's certainly fun to think about.
Well, have you looked at any of the, I had a show that I did earlier with some scientists from the University of Colorado. They have a great physics department there. And they're looking at the zero-point energy field, and they have the ability to actually create batteries now from the zero-point energy field. They are developing it, and it's really promising. And so are you looking at some of that stuff?
Could you repeat that?
I have a show. I did a show with the scientists at the University of Colorado on the zero-point energy field. You know, they have this it's an indirect way to get it energy through the, you know, how the LED, you have to listen to my show to really get, you know, the technology behind it because could do it quickly. It's not going to work for listeners here, but basically they can indirectly tap into the zero point energy field by lowering the energy level of electrons. And then the energy field zaps them back up to full strength. They slow them down and then it speeds it up. And then they keep doing that and keep pulling energy from the zero point energy field with that. And they were talking to NASA a little bit about using, because it will last forever. These batteries that they're looking at will last forever, and they're very lightweight, and they were looking at them for doing batteries and maybe the space probes and things that go out. And I was wondering if you're looking at some of that stuff.
We're not. But I'm going to go look it up because it sounds super interesting.
It's really great. You got to listen to my show and then you can, and if you have any questions, I can direct you to some of those people. But I was so excited for that show. Very interesting. Okay, let's get on to something that's really funny now because this is something that came out this is the first week, this past Sunday, X-Files came out, right? And it was they had the highest ratings ever. And I've always been a fan of X-Files. And I'm sure almost everybody in science watches shows like this. First of all, are you a fan of it?
I've never watched the X-Files.
You haven't? Oh, you would probably. If you like Star Trek, if you like Star Trek and stuff, I bet you would like the X-Files.
I do like Star Trek. And I love Battlestar Galactica. And I love Firefly. I've never seen X-Files.
I bet you would like it. Well, the X-Files show is they're kind of into government conspiracies, but they're also into like aliens and space things and stuff. And so I wanted to know what you thought about that. With it being so popular,
yeah, you know, I'm disappointing you. I'm super sorry. I've never seen it, but you know, maybe I'll watch one.
Well, the interesting thing, probably more broad than that, is there's so many with the internet and stuff. There's been this huge, more of an interest in space, I think, and this whole idea of like life outside and other worlds and more of a fascinating, you know, thing on that. So what do you think about all that? You know, all the, I don't know if you follow that, but you know, the fact that there's just so much more talk and buzz about it. And with the X-Files, they were even talking about the government, you know, there was government projects that looked into, and they talked about it in the X-Files. That was the whole opening about how the government looked into, you know, life on other planets and stuff. And I'm just curious of keeping it light, what you thought about that.
So I am a firm believer that, well, first of all, I am not so arrogant to think that the only life in the universe is here on Earth. I do believe that there is life on other planets. I'm not convinced that they've been here and visited Earth. I'm not necessarily in that camp. I'll remain open-minded, but I'm pretty convinced that there is life on other solar systems.
Well, there would almost have to be, right? With how many, what we're a galaxy kind of in the boondocks of the universe. I mean, we're way out there. And if there are other, and we're not even that big of a deal in our own galaxy. It's kind of a far out solar system, right? In our own galaxy or our own, galaxy. And there's so many other galaxies. So you would think that the ones that were formed a while ago would have life that, there would probably be life everywhere, all over the place. And ones that were formed a while ago would have really advanced life, you would think.
I'm pretty sure we're not the most advanced life forms in the universe. Yeah.
It would have to be that way, I would think.
If you just think about things pragmatically, I agree with you.
Do you think that there's any truth to all that, the stuff that's out there now with all the, you know, what X-Files is based on? You know, I mean, they have so much stuff going around the internet. It's hard not to see it. You're probably so busy, but the YouTube has, and millions of people are watching all this stuff. And Pepsi did a commercial on something. They did a commercial about the Black Knight satellite that is going around. And they said Tesla first observed this Black Knight satellite. And they said that Pepsi put this out and said that it wasn't fiction. It's real. And so, you know, X-Files is fiction, right? It's going off it's using a lot of the space stuff and kind of taking it to an extreme, but there's more stuff out there. And especially with like Pepsi coming out and doing this commercial based on this Black Knight satellite that Tesla observed. Have you heard of this Black Knight satellite and what is that?
You know, I've not heard of this, but you know, certainly Pepsi would want to leverage.
Oh, absolutely.
One of the most popular shows. And Pepsi would certainly want to leverage that popularity.
Well, it's just weird because they're all claiming it's real, you know, and when Pepsi goes out there and says, this is real, this happened and Tesla observed it. It's like, well, what is that? You know? So I had to ask you, I have to, when I have the president of SpaceX on an interview, I have to ask you those questions because my listeners will be like, why did you not ask her these questions? Are you an idiot?
Yeah. And, you know, I think I even disappoint my children. I don't have much of a social life and I don't have a lot of time to explore a lot of what's going on, but, it sure sounds fascinating.
It's absolutely fascinating. I can send you I'll send you links to some of the stuff that's absolutely fascinating that I've been looking into. How can people learn more about your company and follow its progress? And it's so fascinating what you do. And I think there'd be lots and lots of people that would be interested in just really tracking what you're doing and how things are working.
Sure. So we have a great website, spacex.com. We've got a Facebook page. We definitely do tweets. We use our Twitter accounts to bring people up to speed on what we're doing. I think we're all over YouTube with our launches and our landings, both our successes and our lack of successes on that. So it's pretty easy to follow SpaceX. Like I say, our website, our Facebook, and our Twitter accounts are, are pretty active, and I love the videos. We actually just put out a video about 10 days ago on the landing, first time Falcon 9 landed, and it's a great video. I think it's on regular YouTube. It's on our website. And probably on our Facebook page, too. You probably get there on Facebook, too. I've seen that video probably 10 or 15 times, and I still get chills and goosebumps when I see that. So to start out and get a sense of what SpaceX is doing, I strongly recommend going and looking at that video. It's called Falcon 9, the landing of Falcon 9. Falcon 9 has landed.
Okay. Excellent. So people can see that. And who are your, NASA's your biggest customer, but who else are customers for you?
So yeah, NASA is our biggest customer. We have a lot of telecommunications firms that are customers: Iridium, SES, Inmarsat, Eutelsat, Asia Broadcast Satellite, AsiaSat, HiCom. I'm going to miss a bunch here, but we've got customers all over the world. I think the next biggest market segment besides the work we're doing for NASA is the telecommunications industry.
Because you're putting up satellites all over, right? Because telecommunications now is communication via satellite with all the wireless communications and so forth. Even data, right? Data is starting to go through satellites a lot more.
Definitely. Yep.
Are there other?
And then we flew the Discover mission for the U.S. Air Force, and as well as there was NOAA and NASA connection there. We've got a mission upcoming on our next sized rocket called Falcon Heavy. We'll be launching the STP-2 satellite on that. Argentina has bought launches from us. German government has bought launches. Canada actually has bought launches. So international organizations have bought launches from us, as well as both U.S. domestic and international organization telecommunications firms.
Excellent. Your company is probably growing very quickly.
It is growing rapidly.
And you're just you're trying to keep up with it, because I know when companies grow really quick, it's just wow. There's like a swell of getting operations in place, and not just the technology is a big deal, but also doing all the details of making everything work is a lot of work.
Yeah, rapid growth is hyper growth is very difficult to manage. Yeah, no question.
Hyper growth. Yeah, that's
super exciting though.
Oh, it's our best thing to be part of.
Yep.
Well, thank you so much for joining us today, and I really appreciate that. And I'll put links on my website so people can know where to find out more about you. And I am going to send you some of those interesting things, like the zero-point energy field and some of the other things that I've been looking into.
Perfect. That would be great. I would love to see that.
Yeah. Okay. Well, great. Well, thank you so much, Gwen. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
I hope you enjoyed that conversation. It's really fascinating to talk to her. But I have my son to thank for that. He is really good friends with her son. So you can thank my boy for that fascinating interview. And this other one that I have coming up with Sean Wilkinson, same thing. He tipped me off to this company. He's very excited about how they're doing distributed data using blockchain and Bitcoin. And security is much safer than any other method, and they're 99% reliable and half the price. So very fascinating. So let's get into the interview I have with Sean Wilkinson. Hi, Sean. Welcome to the program.
Hello. How are you?
Good. Well, thank you for joining me. I wanted to talk to you because you have a whole paradigm shift on how to think about cybersecurity with using blockchaining. So I want to dive into that. But before we dive into that, I want to hear kind of how you came up with it and what your thoughts are. But I want to talk also about where you think the country's at regarding cybersecurity. You know, how bad of an issue is it right now?
Well, it's pretty bad. Supposedly, we can't even keep our elections secure. So starting there, that's pretty bad. There's numerous issues, in terms of in various different ways. You know, you look at governments not really able to keep, track or keep their information secure. You look at corporations. Maybe for example, have you used Dropbox or Yahoo? Have you used any of those services?
Yes. Yeah.
Nice. Hacked. You can buy those credentials online for $5 on the dark web. So it's, you know, these large corporations that we trust to store our data are getting compromised over and over again. There's many examples of that. And even on the, you know, individual level, you know, so many people getting their identity stolen and credit card fraud and all these other issues. So it's really across a host of industries, a host of governments, and the consumer is not a good space right now. It's only getting worse.
Yeah,
there are some gleaming lights. There are some gleaming lights. There are a lot of people who are seeing the issues and try to push towards a bit of a better future. For example, Google and many other companies are pushing towards using HTTPS instead of HTTP, so encrypting most internet traffic that we use to view websites and enter in our card information. You know, that's trending to be going from, you know, unencrypted to encrypted with projects like Let's Encrypt that are kind of leading that front. So I think with the revelations of, you know, hacks for government and corporations, people are starting to wake up to the issues, and corporations and governments and people are starting to look for tools that they can use to protect ourselves. But right now it's pretty bad.
You came up with a whole nother way of doing this using blockchain, which is pretty phenomenal. So what, can you explain to people what it is that you're doing?
I run Storj, STORJ, which is a cloud storage platform. And it all kind of started in around 2014. I was involved in kind of Bitcoin and blockchain, early miner, mined about $50 worth of Bitcoin, and suddenly that turned into $10,000. And I was like, whoa, what's this? So I fell in love with the technology. I was doing a undergrad at Morehouse College in computer science and fell in love with the technology. And around this time, I was also playing around with various projects, storing a bunch of data. And I just looked at storing this data on your traditional cloud storage providers like Amazon or Google. And they're really, really, really expensive, like 30x over the cost of running yourself. So I thought, that doesn't make sense. What if I could utilize excess hard drive space? You have some extra hard drive space, or friend has some extra hard drive space, your neighbor has some extra hard drive space. Like, what if I could utilize that and get a lot of advantages out of it? And so I kind of went down the rabbit hole, like how that could be built out, and found that kind of the mixture of that problem in Bitcoin technology was kind of the perfect solution. You have Bitcoin, which is this massive incentivized computing network that, you know, even in 2014 was larger than the top 500 supercomputers combined. And so it really showed, you know, people like myself how to build out these large incentivized trustless networks. And so I kind of try to merge the two, cloud storage and Bitcoin and blockchain technology, to make something that was distributed but also very robust, very secure, didn't need a third party to be able to trust your data with, like you typically do with cloud storage providers.
So how are you doing? Is the blockchain in all of your data, or is it, basically would all my data be safe using your solution, or can they still hack into it somehow?
So I guess it's worth describing a little bit of the process that we go through. So we use blockchain in two ways. Number one, we use it for payments. So we are not taking all this data and stuffing it in a data center somewhere. We're putting this data on a bunch of just average computers that people rent their hard drive space out to us. And so to get people to do that, we pay them in a Bitcoin-like currency, because that's the only way you do it. You store a small bit of a file and we owe you 1,000% for doing that. We can't do a bank transfer for that. And to make that secure, to make that even work, you know, you're taking your, you know, tax documents and you're putting it on our platform and it goes off to some random person's computer, you know, at first glance, that would seem crazy. But it works a lot better because the way that we secure the data, we secure it before it goes out on our network, before it goes on our platform. That's the only way you can do it, and that's the only way that data should be secured. The data is encrypted on your PC, and only you have access to those keys, no one else. And then it's split up into small pieces, then distributed to our users and network. So at the end of the day, only you have the keys to that data. Not even we can't do it. We have storage labs who are providing this data service, this cloud data service. We cannot look at the data because we do not have the encryption keys. And only you know, how that data is assembled back together. And so this is a big departure from traditional cloud storage where you just give it to Google or give it to Amazon and say, please don't lose this and please don't have it hacked.
Well, is it stored all over the place too? So you chop it up. So my document might be stored in 8 different places.
Right. So you have, the file and you split it up into 8 pieces. Right, and you distribute it to, 8 different people, and you're of course doing this redundantly in case one of those people disappears. So unlike a traditional storage service where you can just go to one place and grab the data, now you have to compromise 8 different places in 8 different networks and 8, all over the world. That's a much harder problem than here's the data right here.
Yeah, it's pretty interesting. So are you getting a lot of interest from the big data company or the big tech companies, or are they not liking what they're seeing? Do they feel threatened?
So we kind of have a focus on developers, people who are building applications and websites and whatnot, because it turns out those are the people who really make the decisions for where the data is stored on the internet. You go and download, the next cat picture sharing application to your phone. You don't care what service your data goes to or what server it goes to. You just care that the application works. And so the application developers, the people who actually build those apps, are the ones who make the decisions on where they go. And majority of that data is going towards places like Amazon's cloud or Google's cloud. We do have some interest from some larger companies that, of course, are storing their analytical data, their backups, those things, and they're doing it at a massive scale. So anything that can be used to deliver that faster, cheaper is really interesting to them. But again, our core customer, core people that we're trying to focus on is those developers that actually decide where we store our data in the cloud.
Interesting. So you're getting a lot of you're trying to get to the change leaders first. Is that kind of what you're trying to do to develop all your market? You're trying to get to the people who would lead the industry?
Right. So again, the average user, is downloading an application like Dropbox, right? And for their cloud storage needs. But, most people don't know for years and years and years, all Dropbox was doing was just shipping all their data to Amazon S3. They didn't store a single shred of data. That's since changed, but for many years, they just shipped all their data to Amazon S3 to store it. And they were just essentially a front-end application to kind of view your storage. So we kind of see the place to focus to get kind of this encrypted and better storage out to users that is faster, more secure, a lot more cost effective is not to go to the individual user and say, hey, you should use, this other application, this other signature application. It's to go to the applications like Dropbox and saying, hey, we can store that data more securely, faster, and cheaper than anyone else. And so you and I get that by proxy, but we don't actually have to do any work to make that happen.
So do you think that that this eventually could be a new standard in computing? Do you think it could take over how things are done?
I think it's, with any new disruptive technology, it takes some time.
But is that your goal?
But there's Our goal is really to disrupt the way data is traditionally stored. There's just so many inefficiencies when it comes to taking this data and trying to stuff it inside of a data center, you know, a $600 million data center that Google or Amazon might build. When really the internet is a more distributed network, which no singular person or entity is controlling. And so we really want to take this data and store it on these many distributed devices. And by doing so, you end up getting a lot of benefits in terms of privacy and security and cost. And that's what we're trying to bring to the users. But again, we're trying to do it in a way that's very simple, and you and I don't have to worry about it.
Well, now if Target wants to store all their credit card, or a bank wants to store all their credit card type information or all their account information, would it be, could you do that? Could you go into a big bank and they could use this system to store all their stuff, and all their stuff would then be safe?
Yeah, so that's types of data that is frequently kind of exposed and hacked, that kind of credit card data and other financial information. Right now we are focusing on kind of large uses of data, so it might be database backups for a large company, or cancer research data that's very, very large. But we'd love to be able to get into, these institutions that are having so much trouble in terms of securing that data. Some of the obstacles that we run up against are, there are some laws and regulations in terms of the way this data is stored. It doesn't necessarily mean that data is secure, but there's particular legal things that you have to do to be able to store stuff like credit card data. So that's kind of our second tier.
The law is, the law doesn't accommodate a new way of doing things that's so much better.
Right.
Well,
so
that's
example,
a common thing in a lot of industries. I'm not sure if you're going to be able to get past that, but not in the short term.
Well, in the short term, no, but kind of the long term, that's something to aim for. There are some legal, with anything or with these types of industries, there are some legal red tape things that you kind of have to sift through to be able to capture that market.
Yeah, so basically,
something that we're very interested in.
Basically, every other industry could be safer than the finance industry before the law comes around and actually gets on board. I mean,
yeah,
being honest,
absolutely,
it could take
absolutely.
Some time, but very interesting. Okay, so what is your plan now then? So you're going out after developers, you're trying to build up. How big are you right now?
So we're about 13 people full time. That's not including kind of our contractors and our community. So we have a pretty large open source community that's kind of behind us, that helps us promote and provide support, and kind of brings the whole vision and idea forward. So we have about 25,000 people kind of on our mailing list, and we have a couple thousand people on our open chat that we have. So you can find, if you're curious to learn a little bit more about us, you can go on storage.io, storj.io, and we have a community section where people, help us every day to kind of push this vision forward of a more secure and a cloud that has a little bit more user control than exists now.
Well, it's just a different way of doing business. Now, do you have investors behind you?
Oh, we do. So we actually started out as kind of just an open source project, just trying to figure out the technicals. And we kind of came down to, this is really cool and useful technology, but at the end of the day, we need to make it really easy for people to use. So we founded a company in 2014. We're headquartered here in Atlanta. We also have offices in Salt Lake City. And our focus is just like, okay, this is, you know, really secure, private, fast, uses some really cool technology like Bitcoin and blockchain, but we just got to make it simple. And so that's what we did. And we just made a service that allowed people to, you know, store data and retrieve data, but they don't have to worry about, you know, any of the technology or, you know, any of the Bitcoin stuff or any of the encryption stuff. They just, you know, can use it to store data and retrieve data securely. But again, it's not having to worry about any of the technicals.
I love it because it solves a lot of problems. So you guys are doing
good job.
You guys are doing a lot of good work there. And hopefully maybe you can get into Silicon Valley and get all those people using your service. Maybe Amazon will buy you out and take over, you know, use this for all the stuff they do.
Or maybe the opposite way around. We buy them out.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah,
maybe.
I love that.
You got big plans.
That's why we have an office in Salt Lake City. It's very close to kind of the Bay Area where developers are, which are target customers. So it's a very, very quick flight from our founders and team in Salt Lake City.
So do you think eventually if you get big customers that you're going to actually have to buy hard drive space instead of being able to distribute it with all your, you know, developers and people that join your network?
Not at all. Not at all. It's interesting, again, going back to what I was saying before, you know, in 2014, you know, Bitcoin was the largest supercomputer, you know, larger than the top 500 supercomputers combined by an order of magnitude. It was a hobby project then. You know, there's just so much available computing resources and storage resources out there that just aren't being used. That, you know, if you compare Google, Apple, Facebook, Microsoft, you just like combine them all together, like they wouldn't even be a blip on the amount of just available capacity that we just have just sitting on our computers and our laptops and our phones and our desktops. So there's just so much capacity out there that we just see an endless supply.
Wow, what a clever thing that you came up with. That's interesting.
It's been fun.
Well, good. So I hope you do take over Amazon. How do you compare to Amazon, would you say? Like, why do you think you would buy them out instead of them buying you out?
So I guess on the user side and the use side is that we're coming in with a price point that's half off. We have way better security. If Amazon gets hacked, well, there goes your data. If we get hacked, we don't have the encryption key, so nothing happens. Much better performance, and really easier to use. So just trying to come to market with much, much better product. And the kind of the secondary thing is that to scale up and to provide that service, Amazon has to build out, you know, these massive, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars, you know, sunk into a data center versus we're just using, you know, extra hard drive capacity. And so we don't have to invest, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars into infrastructure to make things happen. So the economics are just a lot more efficient.
That's a good business model. You can make a lot of profit then.
I mean, it's like Airbnb versus Hyatt hotels or Uber versus taxis. It's just the economic model of the sharing economy is just much, much better. So we'll see what happens.
Excellent. You got the Uber model with blockchain and data storage. Yeah. You use blockchain and Bitcoin with Uber model to solve all of our security issues.
Absolutely. Well, it's more in the economics, but they do tie together.
Well, excellent. So I'm going to have you up on our radio page. You'll send me some contact information and so people can figure out how to purchase. Is it expensive? If I want to?
No. So we're actually, in terms of cloud storage, we're about half off all the traditional providers. So we're cheaper than pretty much any other cloud storage provider out there.
Wow, you're 50% less and more secure.
Absolutely.
Excellent. Okay. Well, thank you. That should be a good thing for people who are listening, who are looking for a solution. They can save money and be more secure. So I hope you have a good day, and thank you so much for joining us.
Yeah, it was my pleasure.
I hope you enjoyed that interview as well. It's kind of fun listening to him want to take on the world. I remember when I was in my 20s, I thought I could take on the world too. And you never know who is going to be taking on the world. I love the fact that they have those attitudes. They're the ones that change the world the most because they think they can. So I wish the best for them, and I hope they keep that attitude for as long as possible. But I want to remind everybody to go to my website at sarahwestall.com, and you can see over 150 different articles and episodes there. And also remember to subscribe to my YouTube channel and to my newsletter that goes out about every week and a half. So I want to remind everybody to have a wonderful weekend and to have a great rest of the day.
You've been listening to Business Game Changers with host Sarah Westall. As Sarah brings you leading experts, visionaries, and newsmakers who provide the best commentary on big issues and cutting-edge innovations. Sarah's 20 years as a business executive will help you think like an entrepreneur with expertise, energy, and attitude. And learn more about Sarah at sarahwestall.com today. Thank you.